This episode of Landmine Radio is sponsored by Guido's Pizza. Located on International Airport Road in Anchorage, Guido's has been serving the best pizza, pasta, sandwiches, and more since 1984. Guido's is open daily for dine-in service from 11 a.m. to midnight, and they do takeout and delivery until 2 a.m. Whether I'm dining in at Guido's or ordering for delivery, the hardest part for me is always choosing what to get because they have so many amazing items on their menu. If you're looking for a quick bite or want to order food for a big party, Guido's is the place to go. Tell them Jeff from the Landmine sent you. Okay, back here in studio in Juneau with Representative Jenny Armstrong. How you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
I got to say, you gave a week or two ago a special order, which I actually clipped, and you were trying to tell a joke, but you were laughing so hard, you couldn't even tell the joke. It took you a little while to tell the joke.
Yeah.
It was not the plan. Everybody started laughing because you were laughing so hard. Everybody else started laughing.
I know. Now everybody just comes up to me in the hallway and either asks for a dad joke on demand. One person saw me going down the stairs and went, "Hey, pasteurized," like told the punchline of my joke to me.
So you said, what was it? I'll tell you the joke.
I can do it without falling apart. So what is the fastest liquid on earth? It's milk. It's pasteurized. It's pasteurized before you've even seen it.
So I was pasteurized. So I was in the room and I was like, what did she say? And then all of a sudden I was sitting next to him. I said, oh, pasteurized.
Yeah.
And because you were laughing so hard. It was after a lot of tense budget. And
it was a really exhausting week. And I've tried to bring some joy to the building. And that was one way. It was very spontaneous for me to do that. But it made everyone laugh.
Well, speaking of bringing joy to the building, one thing I want to talk about, maybe not the building itself, but Alaska, is you have a bill on psychedelics.
I do.
And, you know, this has been a thing for a while. I was telling you before we started, I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago on 60 Minutes, they had a thing about like psilocybin and these people who had, you know, like massive drug addiction or alcoholism. Some of these doctors were putting people in these kind of controlled rooms with, you know, blindfolds and like earphones and music. And they put them on essentially kind of LSD or like a psilocybin type mushroom.
MDMA and psilocybin are the two that are going to most likely be approved by the FDA first. So we are anticipating that a form of MDMA will be approved in August and that psilocybin will hopefully follow in the next 1 to 2 years. So yeah, you're completely right. The way that it works for folks who aren't aware, and it's for addiction, treatment-resistant depression, severe PTSD. It's also been used for end-of-life care. Folks who are, stage 4 cancer, terminal illnesses and this is what's incredible. So you can have someone in the most recent phase 3 trial, you can have severe treatment resistant PTSD and you do 3 8-hour sessions in a room. And that's called the set and setting. So it's a very prescribed room. That's actually part of the prescription, essentially the lighting, the music. You can actually go on Spotify and find the John Hopkins playlist that they use for their psychedelic trials.
So you can
go and listen to the music that they play as people go on that like 8-hour journey. And you're with a therapist or another monitor who is guiding you through essentially rewiring your brain and healing that trauma. You do 3 8-hour sessions under the influence of the MDMA and you do 12 drug-free sessions. In that 3 to 5 month period you do those sessions, you can go from having severe PTSD, suicidal, to being 72% went into complete remission.
Yeah, when that 60 Minutes program from years ago, some of these people who had, you know, many years of addiction, whether drugs or alcohol, had just been cured basically.
Yeah.
And they had gone to rehab and they had tried all these things and nothing worked. And then it didn't work for everybody, but it was like a lot of them, it totally fixed or cured.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the only things that we know of that's been tested that can actually rewire your brain. It is phenomenal what can happen because trauma changes your brain and psychedelics in a way can change it back. So that's the way I can simplify it.
So like when I hear like MDMA, I'm thinking of like raves or psilocybin, like mushroom high school people.
Totally. Yeah. We're talking about those drugs.
Has that like been... I imagine there's been pushback of people who are saying, I can't believe we're talking about drugs or...
Yeah, I think for some folks, the application that was put into the FDA last year, which is under priority review that we're expecting in August, has 20 years of clinical trial data. Berkeley has a webpage on clinical trials that are happening on everything related to psychedelics. It's like 65 pages long. The state of Texas, actually, Governor Perry used state funds to fund their own psychedelic research at Baylor and at the VA. So I think what's been really cool about this is you've seen folks folks. This has not been a partisan issue. It's folks on the right, the left. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's really been driven by a lot of veterans at the federal level who've gone through these trials, who've had their lives saved, and who've really advocated for essentially kind of raising awareness and getting people on board and destigmatizing. And I think even now there's folks who kind of joke about it, who maybe are using MDMA or magic mushrooms recreationally. And they're like, well, I have depression and I'm not fixed and I'm not changed, you know, and you can't just like pop the ecstasy and you're going to be cured. It's really...
I was at a rave and I was depressed and then I don't feel better.
Yeah. So if you are wondering why recreationally doing that doesn't work, it's because that set and setting and having that therapist who is really guiding you through that medicine is a really, really key part of this.
So are they giving you the same amount as you would do recreationally to kind of get like a trip, or what is it?
Yeah, I don't actually know the amounts off the top of my head for in terms of the prescription. And I'd actually bet that the dosing would change just like any other kind of prescription, depending on your weight and age and other factors like that. But yeah, you're not going to be, people are joking like, oh, you're going to be bouncing off the walls and going crazy. I'm sure if you were watching the sessions like on camera, it's pretty staid.
I mean, the thing that comes to mind for me is like, you know, in high school, people talk about doing this stuff. It's like they always talk about like the bad trip, you know, if they do something and they get in an environment where they're like...
And that's set and setting. It's environment. Know. Everything comes down to environment. So that's why the environment is so controlled. And that's part of, Jeff, why we're going to have a task force. So that's what the bill is. The bill is going to establish a task force.
Do they need volunteers? Because, I mean put me in. I'm willing to help the science.
The task force, it's amazing. I started working on this bill last January. It was one of the first things I started working on. Have met so many incredible people across the state who have been from the medical community, the Native community, veterans who've all either traveled out of country to go through this type of treatment and have come back and shared stories with us. And it's truly life-changing for people.
So some states have this?
Some states it's decriminalized to do this therapy. There's a huge underground and black market for underground psychedelic therapy, but in other countries it's legal. So for example, there's like veterans groups that actually sponsor scholarships to send veterans with PTSD to other countries where there's retreat centers where they can undergo therapy. So most commonly Peru, Costa Rica, and Jamaica.
Reminds me of like ayahuasca.
Totally, yeah.
Type thing.
Yep. So a lot of people travel for ayahuasca as well. So it's just like that.
So now, and I know some people here in Alaska who are doing ketamine.
Yeah.
Micro. Now that's not a psychedelic.
It's different.
Right?
It's not a psychedelic.
They're micro. Like they get a prescription and they get micro. And I'm thinking ketamine. Like that's like the.
You can get ketamine therapy in Anchorage right now. There's clinics that are offering ketamine therapy. It is it works differently and has a completely different protocol. Yeah, I'm not super familiar with ketamine. My focus has been on MDMA and psilocybin.
I just remember ketamine, they called it Special K. You know, that was another one that was like
party. Well, in the bad trip, drugs. You hear about going into a K-hole.
Yes,
which sounds terrible.
I've never done that, but I know people that do it, they say, a few people I know that do it, they say it just helps them. And they kind of can relax and they... You know, it's a smaller, it's not like you're taking a big amount to get like high, but you're...
Microdosing is really, really common across the U.S. There's huge communities of folks who are microdosing. And I think they're basically self-medicating. And so I think it's going to be huge that this is kind of coming online as a legal prescription. There's going to be a lot of people who can get access to this who weren't able to previously, because right now access to a lot of the folks who are undergoing underground therapy in the U.S., it's expensive and it requires privilege, right? You kind of need to have word of mouth and know other rich friends who've done this.
Yeah, it's probably not cheap, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And so now one of the things the task force is going to look at is licensing and insurance and how do we make sure that the folks who need it the most can get it. Because in Alaska, we have the highest rate of veterans per capita. We have, you know, the highest rates of domestic violence, sexual assault, trauma. So it's going to have an outsized impact on our state. If everyone who is suffering from something that qualifies for psychedelic treatment was able to get it, you can only imagine how much that is going to change their lives, could change our communities, change our economy. This could truly be a life-changing, world-changing type thing.
So where's the bill now? It's
the bill is
in
rules.
Right?
It's in House rules and Senate rules, and we are very hopeful that it'll be on the floor, hopefully in the next week. So we've
getting down to the wire here.
Yeah, it's that time, but we're in a really good position to be in rules in both bodies. So
have you counted the votes?
I've already submitted my chit sheet. So
you have the votes.
I've got the votes. I've got
the
support. Yep. Yep, we're ready. So we've got the support. It's just a matter of getting it scheduled.
So it's Craig Johnson and Bill Wilikowski. Those are the rules people.
Yep. Yeah. And we've gotten really great feedback from everyone and surprisingly no pushback. I've worked really hard. I've met with every single House representative except three who I'm meeting with this week and talked with them one-on-one about the bill, how it works, demystifying psychedelics, explaining that this task force is not going to legalize psychedelics or take a position on it. We're just trying to make sure that for once Alaska actually be maybe ahead of or just on the curve for something so that when this is legalized, we're not scrambling and figuring out how do we implement this? How do we license people?
Input from the governor?
Not yet.
I'll
be looking forward to conversations with the third floor for sure.
That's a big one, maybe.
Yeah, but again, it's a task force that's meant to give us their expert opinions on legislation to run. The task force could give us recommendations and the governor could say, I don't agree with any of these regulation changes you think I should make. And the legislature could say, I don't. And that's mm-hmm. it. There's nothing enforcing or binding. We are just bringing together a really passionate group of folks and experts who can give us, the folks who make laws and manage regulations, the best advice. I just want to see us do this right. I want to see us be best in class in the country for how we're managing psychedelic therapy. And I want to demystify and destigmatize what this treatment looks like. And that's been my goal. And so far, it's been going well.
Well, that 60 Minutes I watched years ago, really, you know, I watch it all the time. And that one really stuck with me.
These
people who were almost emotional about finally, you know, beating their addiction. Many tried to for a long time. And
there's amazing documentaries. There's How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan is a way that a lot of people kind of learned about psychedelic therapy. And again, like I said, like Megyn Kelly has done a podcast on this. Jordan Peterson has talked about this. So for folks on the right who might follow those people, there's just a lot of great content and stories.
Yeah, I think I saw the Megyn Kelly one.
Yeah,
I didn't watch all, but I saw she had done that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, whenever I think of like the psychedelic, have you ever heard of or watched that video from like the 50s, it's kind of this famous like housewife. They give her this, like doctor gives her LSD. Have you seen this?
No.
I should like send you this. It's on YouTube. So it's like titled like housewife takes, you know, and he gives her a glass of water and it's got LSD in it. And she starts like talking and she's like, you don't understand. Like I can touch the color, you know, and she's like totally tripping.
Yeah.
But he was like a doc and he like, you know, just hold, I'll send you the video. You can watch it. But it's
LSD is quite different. I don't actually know the status of any LSD trials. I think most of the folks who are undergoing MDMA and psilocybin are not going to be having a party in their room.
Right,
They are rewiring their brain and rewiring trauma.
Well, didn't the government, wasn't that like, was it MK Ultra? What was the one where the government back in the day, they were like giving people LSD for like experiment? This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think it was MK Ultra.
Yeah, I don't remember the name. I think it's really unfortunate because we obviously had a big wave of psychedelics in the 60s and 70s. And because of media coverage and bad trips and them not this not being taken in the right settings, it kind of scared people. There was like, you know, the acid panic, the LSD panic, and it became very taboo. And mm-hmm. I still see some leftover feelings around that where people kind of panic caring about psychedelics.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not what you think.
I've always heard of the dreaded acid flashback.
Yeah.
People talk about where you do it. And then way down the road, it can like research, like something can happen and it can kind of like affect your, you know, you can have a bad trip flashback.
The most common side effects in these past 20 years have been nausea and sweating. So I think lots of other medicines have much, much more serious side effects. That's the other thing that's kind of miraculous about psychedelics and plant medicines is that the side effects are so, so minimal as to almost be non-existent.
I was watching Bill Maher every week I watch Bill Maher.
You got the shirt on.
I'm wearing the shirt because I was down there last year. I went to a live taping in California. It was amazing. Actually, Quentin Tarantino was there when I was there.
Wow.
So I was in the audience and I was like 40 feet from, I was like, oh my God, there he is. It's amazing. But they were talking about, and he's been talking about this for a while, this Ozempic.
Yeah.
And how it's like this, you know, kind of miracle deal. And this lady, he had a Jillian Michaels, you know, the fitness.
Yep.
And they were talking about it. And it's like the label, it's like pancreatitis, like all these crazy,
it's
like, I just, that
side effects are a meme now. It's like, cure your stomach ache. You might have a heart attack, stroke, die.
Yeah, no, it's like people are taking this and it's like this miracle drug, but they don't really know how it works. And there's mm-hmm. massive potential side effects.
Yep.
You know, pancreatitis and all kinds of, and then they say at some point it wears off, you know,
yep.
And it's really just, it's like we need to be healthier and
yep.
this miracle drug. With all these crazy, like, unlabeled side effects.
Yeah. And that's
way worse than, like, probably doing, like, pot or, like, you know, like a...
Oh, it's insane. And that's what's so amazing about psychedelics and plant medicine. In the right set and setting, your side effects are getting a little overheated and maybe getting nauseous. You know, like, that's why the set and setting and who's in the room with you and who's overseeing that is so important. it's just, to me, safer than, you know, the majority of legal drugs that we have now in terms of side effects.
There's another bill. I was just watching it in the House Finance. Stanley Wright has a bill to kind of expunge some of these marijuana convictions.
Yeah, I'm a co-sponsor.
Like possession from years ago when it was illegal. Now it's not illegal. And people are getting like a background check and for an apartment or for a house or for a job. Right. And it's like you had a possession, marijuana possession 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
But even this is, I see, getting some pushback, this bill, which seems like, to me, kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I agree. I fully support that bill and think, I say this all the time, there's so much that we can fix and come together on that I don't know why we fixate on kind of nitpicking things that are really targeted at different groups of people. Like when you think about how many kids are in food insecure households, why are we not all rallying around fixing that? So that's just kind of my opinion is like, why are we targeting or hurting or why don't we want to help these folks who just want to be functioning members of society? Especially since marijuana is legal now, it just doesn't make any sense.
So this is your second, coming up on the end of the second session and you're not running.
I'm not running.
Which a lot of people are upset about.
Yeah.
A lot of people like you down here.
Yeah.
Very high energy, very engaged.
Yeah, thank you.
You work hard.
Yeah.
But what's been your kind of takeaway from being down here for 2 years? And you mentioned a lot of fighting over a lot. There's not a lot of stuff. I mean, some stuff gets done, but it's you're right. It's so much division.
Yeah, there's so much. I would never speak for my colleagues' motives for why they have supported me in different things, but I am
You're not on the House floor here, okay?
I know, but it's still important to say that. I am really proud of how much I've accomplished. I made history with HB 99, getting through two committees as a minority member. I got one of the very few amendments passed.
And this was LGBTQ
equality bills got farther than it ever did, even in a majority Democratically held caucus. I got one of the few amendments passed for universal health care. I have paid family leave moving. I've got the psychedelics bill going to the floor. And my advice to everyone is build relationships.
Four or 6 years, right? Years.
Yeah, it's building relationships and trying to find the things that connect me with people and not the things that divide me. So I work really hard. I always speak my mind. Everyone knows where I stand. No one would ever doubt that I'm vanilla or trying to be middle of the road. Everyone knows that I'm a progressive and where I'm at, but I work really hard to just build relationships. These are folks that I want to get to know and I want to work with and I want to support them. And I think just being really collaborative and as cheesy as it sounds, like leading with love and connection and not divisiveness and hate has been how I've worked. And then the other part of it is I just do the work. I met with almost every single legislator before that amendment hit the floor. Like I said, I met with almost every single legislator on my psychedelics bill. So I think it's just a combination of good old fashioned hard work and building relationships.
You're very right. I mean, some people don't work. Some people don't meet with folks. Some people are in a bubble.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why, you know, something, their bill or their amendment only gets 20 or, you know, 10 votes or 5 votes or something.
Yeah.
And totally. It's like, well, you have to, like anything else, you have to talk to people and you have to, a lot of it's relationships. A lot of it's hey, you know, you help me here, I'll help you there. That's kind of how it works down here. And
totally.
Some people didn't get the memo.
Everything is relationships in the building. Yeah.
So I want to ask you about, there was a hearing, I think it was last week, I was in it was a resources committee, which you're on. I heard there was going to be a spicy hearing. And typically when I hear that, I'm like, oh, maybe, maybe not. But this one was, it was this guy, these guys from Narwhal, which is a smaller oil company has some leases on West Harrison Bay on the North Slope and near where Shell has leases, which they've had for 12 years. And these guys came in like, real hot. And they went after John Boyle, the DNR commissioner, and they went after Shell. And it was, did you know that was coming?
I did not know that was coming. No.
And the interesting part was Tom McKay is the resources chair, Republican oil guy. And he basically brought these guys up to say, you know, there's a problem. Shell's not acting on these leases. The DNR won't testify. Shell won't testify. And sometimes it takes a guy like Tom to do this kind of hearing, just like I think to do big things in education, it takes a Democrat to be the leader.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people question the motivations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you had like Dan Sadler and George Rauscher who were in the majority kind of pushing back. Oh my God, we can't, this is like the wrong hearing for this. They can't be saying these things. So I guess what was your take? And you asked some questions too about what they said, because they made some pretty wild claims.
It's really complicated. I would have really, really appreciated having the commissioner there or Shell there or having a little bit more context. I don't know any more than you know, right? I was just in that room with you. I heard the same hearing you had. I didn't know anything before. I haven't learned anything after. And so I think it's just one of those really complicated things where I'm keeping my hands off of it. And I think waiting to hear from what the commissioner wants to say publicly on the matter. My understanding is that there might be some pending litigation. There might be some things that are preventing them. Their hands are tied. I don't know. It was definitely interesting.
It was a spicy hearing.
It was spicy, and I'm just curious to see what we learn next. I'm just in a listening and learning mode, and it was pretty intense. And I think for Tom's sake, like, he's obviously interested in develop, right? Like, let's develop these leases.
For Tom to bring those guys up and have them say what they said, and, you know, obviously they have an interest in making people think there's a lot of oil there, but I mean, it is above Willow. It's close to Willow.
Yeah.
And it's close to Pica. And, you know, I think they made the claim that they think it could be like a Kuparuk or something, which it just frustrates me how sometimes you talk about the division, Republicans tend to be more pro-development, I think. Not always, but, you know, Democrats tend to be maybe less. That's the generalization, but I think kind of more or less true. But when somebody like Tom does this, I think so many people are just, if you go after any kind of oil company, even if they're doing not doing what they're supposed to be doing and they're not, you know, developing, it's like they're perceived as anti-oil, so that means they can't even talk about it. But I love that he brought them up there, and they were willing to. And he said he spent months trying to get the DNR and the Shell to come, and Shell sent a letter saying, we're good. Thanks.
It certainly sparked a conversation, and I think it brought an awareness to the body. And I think we'll just see what happens next in terms of responses and future hearings. I kind of joked on the record. I was like, I'm a Democrat and I'm interested in money and I'm hearing $20 billion. And so I'm just a problem solver. I just want to know what's happening. What can we do? And is there a role for the legislature? Is there things that we can do to help move this forward? Well, there's not always a role for us, but,
I mean, you're one of the unique Democrats who's, you know, very progressive, but you come out, and you're very, I would say, very pro resource development for the reasons you stated. Resources bring money, which can.
I'm pro revenue and I'm pro jobs and I'm pro families. I grew up working class. So for me, I've told so many folks this. I tell the oil folks and I tell the environmental folks, if you don't want a target on your back and if you want to stop oil development, please champion diversifying revenue, champion an income tax. That's where all your lobbying dollars need to go. In my mind, I just want revenue to do good things and build a killer state, right? Like, we are suffering so much. It feels like we're hanging by a thread. There's so much I feel like we're missing out on. I'm just bombarded every day with the problems of the state. And the answer is money. It's that simple. Other states don't have all the problems we have. And so, yeah, when it comes to these projects, these are putting food on table. I have a lot of constituents who run businesses that support the resource development. For me, it's being pragmatic. When people told me you need to be against Willow, I was like, oh, here's a list of schools. Tell me which ones I should close down. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I have to be pragmatic. And until we have an environment where we're willing to have talks about education head tax and a bed tax and an income tax, this is our only source of revenue. And so, and a great source of jobs in our state.
Well, I mean, I see so many Democrats talk about electric cars and you know, kind of getting off gas, but so many of them are like against mining.
I really try to be a bridge on that. That's like a role that I think I play as a Democrat, where I'm like, if you want to have this green revolution, you need minerals to do that. And I, again, being the good progressive I am, I want that to be done responsibly and with local input. But the reality is we are entropic beings, right? Like, we are continuously destroying.
Good word, entropic.
We're just constantly destroying and taking. And unless the entire planet chooses to have a massive shift and we all want to get rid of our cell phones, which require minerals, and stop driving and stop flying, we are going to continue to need resources.
Well, I mean, couldn't I've always said, like, couldn't Democrats just totally own the issue of like electric vehicles if they were for mining? I mean,
totally,
they would kind of checkmate. But the Republicans can say, well, oh, they're against mining, so how can, and it just becomes this fight that never really, you know, gets. And I mean, I'm all for like the market and electrics, and I think they're already happening.
Yeah,
I don't think we should be forcing it or mandating it, but there's already within the market, electric vehicles are being produced at a much higher rate than they were.
Yeah. I care about affordable energy and I care about doing good things for our environment and I care about having good jobs. And sometimes those things are in tension. But I always tell folks, I'm like, I'm super pro renewables and I'm pro, we need oil. Like, there's just a conversation that not a lot of people want to have where the Arctic is responsible for actually a really small percentage of our oil output. And it is true that if we don't drill it here, we're going to drill it somewhere. The need is there. And so it's just a matter of doing it responsibly and sustainably. And yeah, I mean, I say that all the time with mining. It's like, do you understand the conditions do you know what child labor went into getting the minerals that's in your iPhone right now? Mm-hmm. You know, and for national security and defense, like, I would just feel a lot better if Alaska was playing a role in securing those minerals that we're going to need for a wide range of things being reliant on the Congo and China and other countries.
Well, and even a little closer to home, this is really, really concerns me, is we're probably going to be importing LNG. pretty soon from either Canada or Mexico or maybe somewhere else. And it's just like we have so much gas in the state.
It's so frustrating.
And we're going to probably be importing it. And I mean, I'm for renewables too. If the wind or solar, I'm for those things. But I also acknowledge those will not save us when it comes to you have to heat the homes.
Yeah.
So this will offset some of the electrical grid reliance on natural gas because gas spins these turbines and can produce power for like Chugach Electric and MEA and these other utilities. But I mean, you have to acknowledge, hey, renewables, fine. Let's do the renewables. Also, they aren't going to, you can't turn the gas spigot off.
We need to, diversification is the key. It's not just one thing, right? Like, I don't think we should have one source of revenue in our state, one major source. I don't think we should have one source of energy. I think we need to have a multitude of options, and that's what's going to create security and affordable energy for our state. And then that also leads to industry. Like, something that really frustrates me is I don't know how much people realize we lose out on the value chain, like with mining. We actually make very little from mining in our state, and part of that is because of the lands that it's on, but it's too expensive for them to complete all of the steps of the chain of actually what do you do with those minerals
once you mine it. We send it away. Raw.
Yeah, and there's so much more revenue we could be making, and we're not because we don't have affordable energy. So for me, for working families, for industry, for the future of our state, affordable energy is the key. I'm very concerned about importing LNG because to me, it's also a security risk. I don't want to be reliant on a ship getting LNG here.
We go to war with China. We're sitting ducks.
It's scary. So I want to see, I'm a really big supporter on doing a royalty holiday in Cook Inlet, whatever it takes to support folks who can drill and get that gas out of Cook Inlet and buy us time because it's a little complicated in thinking about the economics of the pipeline and stuff, which is not worth getting into, but we need to come up with a plan and we need to be proactive. And I'm hoping this lights enough of a fire under people to figure it out.
Permanent fund can sink in 15, 20 billion on that pipeline and get that baby built. We have the export. People talk about, state and how much the market and how much money the state should be spending. But just think about if we had a real pipeline in this state, 80% of the people are going to have, affordable energy. But you're going to have businesses are going to say, oh my God, all these schools.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the reason the cost of this BSA is such a fight because energy costs have gone up.
Yep.
And it's just, we'd have like unlimited for hundreds of years, cheap energy.
Yeah.
And just think about what that would do. I mean, people talk about this Iceland trip they all went to last year. And I mean, Iceland is importing raw materials and like smelting.
It's amazing.
Stuff, minerals. In an island, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because they have the energy.
Yeah, they have affordable energy. Affordable energy is really the key. So I think whatever it takes to get there, we have a lot of options. And I really hope the legislature continues to work on this and come up with a plan. We just keep kicking the can down the road. We need a real suite of solutions and make a real long-term plan for how we're going to handle energy in the state.
So what's been your big takeaway? You've been here for your second year and you've seen a lot. I mean, it's been pretty wild the last couple of years, actually. You're in the House minority, but the majority is 23, and kind of functionally, three of their members don't always vote with their, Bryce Edgman, Neil Foster, and CJ McCormick, which doesn't make a majority because you need 21.
Yeah.
So some things you guys are voting together with a mix of majority, minority. So
it's dynamic and unpredictable. And I think that's probably what makes it so fun. I mean, you tell me you cover us, but I think the fact that there are these different voting blocks and everyone kind of votes differently, that I think it keeps things interesting.
Well, I think what's going to be the biggest thing coming up is when the budget has to get after the conference committee, right? They haven't, you haven't been through one of those because last year was the turducken, kind of take it or leave it. But typically, the budgets each pass and then different versions and they go to a conference committee. And then when it comes back, you can't change it. It's just an up or down vote.
Yeah.
You accept it or reject it. And you need 21 votes in the House. And I'm very confident the dividend is not going to be anywhere near the House number. And the majority doesn't have any rule on if their members have to vote for which I think is a good rule.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if you're going to be in the majority, after everything's done, you can vote however you want throughout the budget process. But when the whole thing's finished, you got to vote for it so we can pass it. They don't have that. And this stems from Mike Schauer and some people the last several years saying, oh, binding caucus, it's coercive and all these kind of nonsense. But if they don't have the 21 and there's 7 or 8 mega PFD people in their caucus, they have to rely on the minority.
Which is what we did last year.
That's what happened last time. They only had 10 votes in their majority out of 23. They only had 10 yes votes for the budget. But the minority, you guys gave them 16 votes.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you guys got some stuff out of it, but I think you could have got a lot more.
I don't know if we got anything out of it other than the satisfaction of keeping the state running. I mean, it was really, really stressful and exhausting. And we went, I guess it wasn't technically a special session. It was an extension or something.
I think it was a 1 day. No, because they 2 days. Timed out.
Yeah. We like timed out and we had like a 2 day extension or something, but, I don't know. There's a lot less drama this year.
It was a 1 day special session because to extend 10 days, you have to have a 2/3 vote from each body.
That's right.
And it timed out. So it was a 1 day. And the funniest thing about it, or the weirdest thing about it, was the Senate held the capital budget, so the House never really had an official weigh-in on the capital budget. But they had this deal at the end where they were kind of greasing the wheels on capital projects. But they were all going to the members of the majority, many of whom voted no.
Yeah.
I mean, normally when you're greasing the wheels of the minority to say, hey, we need your votes on these procedural votes or these, like, maybe CBR vote or whatever.
Yeah.
But it didn't go to the minority, and most of them voted no.
Everything feels a lot saner this year and calmer. And I'm really curious to see how all of that shakes out in terms of capital budget and appropriations to districts and stuff like that. There's some rumors in the building and yeah, I'm curious how it'll play out.
I was actually pretty surprised the budget process in the House, ton of amendments, half came from David Eastman, but the first day was rather normal. The second day got a little weird,
yeah.
But overall a couple days of amendments and then they passed it out. And then they did this exchange, which you weren't there, were you? It was
no, I was in Anchorage.
It was kind of weird because the Senate secretary, it was supposed to happen at like 2:30 and it didn't happen until like in the evening. Mm-hmm. But we kept joking with like the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly soundtrack, you know, and making it like the face-off. So yeah. She finally came out, Liz, the Senate secretary, with her people and like her crew. And then we were all the media and some legislators. And then she walked over towards the House side. And then Chris, the clerk, wasn't there. So everybody just kind of stood there for a few minutes and it was really awkward. Finally, Chris came around and they did I was hoping for like an actual face-off, like meet in the middle. but they have exchanged the budgets and things should, you know, it's 3 weeks left. So
it's all moving smoothly, knock on wood, because I think, you know, the homeschool ruling that came out, that can throw a curveball. I think the energy pressures are mounting and I'm curious if we're going to see a last minute scuffle on those topics. But so far everything's kind of pacing nicely. I don't know. I'm going to probably jinx us, but.
Well, what you might see, the second session is always crazier because after the first session, all the bills stay alive
and
play for the next, but after this session, everything dies.
Yeah.
Unless it gets revived in like a special session. So I remember a couple of years ago, it was a second session and they were scurrying around to try to get this campaign limits bill passed and it passed the House. It was in the Senate. They were trying to, it was like 30 minutes left. They were like writing down amendments. I mean, it was,
oh my gosh.
And then they had like another bill. It was like a firefighter bill. And they had like an emergency conference committee to work out some issue. And they wasn't even on basis. They just had it in the room outside the Senate and they all had like a 2 minute deal. And there was like 40 minutes left and they had to send the like handwritten versions back and have a vote.
Wow.
So sometimes it gets, I mean,
I keep hearing about that. I'm curious what it's going to look like. I guess, is it going to start getting crazy next week? Like, I'm kind of prepping myself for marathon floor sessions.
Probably the week after. It's not just the floor, but the committees will start.
Committee too, yeah.
Having, you know, because they have this 24-hour rule with a budget. And they can have quicker committee meetings and they can start jamming bills and other bills. And,
right.
And then it just gets some stuff. The thing about that building is things, when there's the agreement or the alignment, things can move very quickly. Especially at the end.
Yeah.
But then things can also get off the rails very quickly.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting.
It'll be. I'm really sad you're not coming back.
I mean, oh, thanks.
I have you reconsidered that?
No. Have you heard of this guy named Jeff Lanfield? I've made my life living hell.
I do feel bad. I feel like I have to spend my life.
I feel at peace, and there's already, as you know, Carolyn Hall is running in my district.
Yes, her husband and I are business partners.
That's right.
A studio. I've known Carolyn for seven or eight years.
Yeah. So she's already hard at work fundraising and getting ready and happy to be passing it off to another woman for the district. And I am at peace.
So far, nobody else has filed.
I'm sure that I'm assuming there's going to be someone who will file at the last minute. We'll see. But I don't plan on slowing down or stopping any of my work. I just won't be doing it as an elected official. So I'm really looking forward to the ways I can still be involved and kind of make an impact. I definitely am not going anywhere for anyone who's like, yes, she's out of here.
Well, the one frustrating, and I don't have kids. I'd like to have a kid someday. Make that happen. But, you know, it's like for working people with families, I see a lot of the folks that come down here.
It's exhausting.
It's so hard.
It's so hard.
It's just not, this place isn't built for people with kids.
Yeah. I mean, I commute every single week. My family comes up here. It is one of the hardest things because I love being a mom. And I run a company and I have like a whole...
Your kid's pretty young, right?
Yeah, he's almost three and my stepdaughter's almost eight. So yeah, it's just every day I'm away is really hard. And I spent every single day with him for 18 months. But so I got really lucky he was home with me because of the childcare crisis.
And like this last election, you know, Will Stapp has young kids. Justin Ruffridge has young kids. Jesse Sumner has young kids. You know,
a lot of dads.
This is a lot more than in the past years where a lot of it's older folks that their kids are... raised or people who don't have kids. And it's supposed to be like, I would say a citizen legislature, but I don't think it's really necessarily representative of the citizenry.
I agree.
When it comes to like jobs and like ages of people and, you know, financial
situation. The day a single mom or a single dad can afford to be and logistically be in session here is when we've really figured it out.
Well, I'm glad, even though the process was really flawed last year on the pay increase, I'm glad they raised the pay.
Yeah.
I believe they should pay them even more.
I am too. I was a fan of the increase. Just, I think that the way it went about caused a lot of outrage, especially from a lot of my constituents. But
the Soviet style committee.
I just met. With all respect to the governor, I think that that just inflamed a lot of people. Yeah. And then we caught a lot of the heat for it. And it was like, the legislators had nothing to do with that, with the way that that all unfolded. And I do think it's really important because, I mean, my take home last year was like maybe 40,000 before the pay increase. And so it takes a lot of privilege and other income to make it work.
It used to be 50.
Well, it's 50, but then like you have your pension and my family's on my healthcare plan. So after all the deductions, like your actual take home is so low that you have to have another job. And if you have another job, how do you work it with session? So you're right. It just makes it to where you're getting retired people or those with a lot of privilege.
And people tend to go after the per diem, which you know, it's $300 a day or something. But when you come down, you have to maintain a house down here.
It's so expensive.
And the rents are high. And then you can't even sometimes rent past mid-April because of the cruise ship people. And then you have to go somewhere else and you have to pay a higher, you know, and you have to travel if you're going back and forth. So I've always been a fan of pay them. I think we should pay legislators a couple hundred thousand. I mean, really just ramp it up and you're going to get a whole, because a lot of people who have businesses or families wouldn't even consider it because of what they're doing. And, you know,
it's a huge, huge time commitment. Your life is not your own and your time is not your own.
And it's not even, session's obviously very busy, but when you're out of session, you're still, you don't just stop
of course.
For 8 months. There's a lot of things happening.
Yeah, I worked a ton and it was only my only interim, but we worked so much on bills. I had a labor and commerce hearing in the interim and you're doing tons of events and listening sessions and meetings. I mean, you're not really slowing down.
I think I just thought about like, we should do per diem for the media. Yeah, let's introduce that bill.
I don't know how popular that would be, Jeff. Well,
I'm not sure that might be a bill that gets no votes in either. I mean, that could be a 0-0 on both.
That could really unite people in their dislike of the bill.
You know, I got a citation last year.
Oh, yeah, I see
which
it on the
wall. I didn't ask for, but I got this top 40 thing, and it just was after the budget, and everybody was like tired when they read it. But I was like pretty shocked nobody objected. I was thinking there was going to be an objection or something. Normally those citations go pretty quick.
Yeah, usually.
Get approved. But sometimes they have been objected to before.
They do, actually kind of regularly now. We had citations get objected to
I think somebody said objected, probably was Eastman, to an honorary, like a death one a while back. And I was like, whoa. I don't care who it is. I mean, they're dead.
Yeah, I've never objected. I think that it's a really lovely thing that we do. It's one of the few things that I think really sparks joy and it makes people feel special and happy and it's a nice thing.
But yeah, it's a nice gesture. So now that you're not running for re-election, once this is over, what do you got plans for the summer?
Yeah, so I'm still running my company and that's been going great. I wake up every day between 5 and 6 and I work on my company from home and I work after hours after I leave the Capitol.
You
so
wake up at 5?
It's why you don't see me at the bars. I've been out once all session because I need to sleep. I commute every week home to be with my family on weekends and I'm still running my company. So I'm kind of on sabbatical and my team is in charge, but I still do meetings every single morning and client work every single morning and then after work too.
I think I've seen you at the bar once.
One
that was last year.
One time last year, maybe a couple times last year, and then once this year I went to the fundraiser for the general fund. But,
oh, yeah, you had the bucket that I...
Yeah, I had the bucket. I carried around the bucket. I said, I can't be a Democrat if I don't have money to spend.
I know, it was
I got
funny.
A lot of money. So I'm going to be working, and then, like I said, I'm kind of scheming and looking at ways that I can continue to be involved and carry forward on the issues I care about, just outside of being an elected official.
Just gotta wait 1 year and you can be a lobbyist.
Oh, man. Yeah, and I'll be traveling. I'm very excited to do a little bit of traveling with the family and, yeah, just wind down a little bit. It's been a really big whirlwind few years.
Well, it's really been great having you down here. I'm sad you're going to not be coming back, but Carolyn's great. And at this point, we'll see about a little over a month left before the filing deadline of June. It's going to be very different this year. There's not going to be nearly as many new people because
I think only two people in the House are not running for re-election. I think it's just me and Laddie, right?
And Ben Carpenter's running for the Senate.
Running for Senate.
Right.
So there'll be someone there.
There'll be a little bit of turnover. But last time there were 17 brand new members in the House. That's almost half. This year, a few folks might lose. So, you know, you could be looking at 5 or 6 or something, but like way less. And then the Senate, there could be a little bit of turnover there. But last time was redistricting was part of it. So some people
It's a presidential election year. So I think that's going to make it really interesting.
Well, the one where it's going to be really, I think maybe the most interesting race based on the presidential year is Cliff Groh.
Mm-hmm.
I think David Nelson, I'm hearing, is going to run again.
Yeah.
And Cliff beat him by like a little over three points last time. But that's a base district, and there's a voting location on Jaybear.
Yeah.
And that was this very low. I think it was like 18% turnout last time in that district. Very low turnout. Yeah. So if David runs, that could be a real race, you know. And then there's obviously some of the...
I think there's a lot of races to watch that are going to be close and interesting to follow.
Some of the Anchorage, I think the Tom McCain, the Julie Colomb, and the Stanley... The Republicans are going to...
Yeah.
They already have opponents kind of going after them on the education. Even though Stanley voted to override, they're still going after him.
I don't even remember. Truly, it's all a blur already. I can't even remember how everyone voted because we took so many different types of votes this year. You know, we did the override in January.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you notice, and I've always said this, and I don't know if it's by design, but it's like on any given bill, you could vote 4 or 5 times, 4 or 5 different ways, and you could say, I voted for that, even though you voted against it. Like, I mean, every time there's reconsideration and there's like the conference version or there's, you know, an amendment, you vote no for, but then you vote yes for.
That's politics, baby, because there's a lot of ways that you can spin how you vote and your voting record or why you chose to vote that way. It's not always the gotcha that people think it is based on a certain vote that you make, because there's other ways you can kind of weave around that. So it's super interesting.
Well, Representative Jenny Armstrong, great having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Last summer, I think.
Yeah, last summer.
Good.
I talked about psychedelics and paid family leave and all the things that I'm now working on. So it's been great. I did it.
That's a rarity where they talk about something and then they do it.
Yeah.
So good work. Well,
yeah, thanks.
The psychedelics bill, that's going to be one to watch.
Yeah,
right?
The bills. Very soon on the floor.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm not going to celebrate by doing a bunch of acid, but, you know, maybe I'll have a... Actually, I haven't had a drink for over a month.
Good for you.
It's been like, let's see, it was St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, because I come down here, and it's not like a secret, it's like a drinking culture, and if you get off work, in Anchorage, I get off work, I go home, and I read, or I go to the gym or something. Here, it's like I walk down the street, and I go to the Triangle, or I go to the Crystal, or I go to the Narrows, and you have 2 or 3 drinks. And then you have 4 or 5 drink, right? And then you come, not saying you, but a lot of people. And then you go home and you're like, man, you wake up, you're hungover. I'll drink more in like a month here than I will in like months or a week here than I will in like months of being in Anchorage. So I finally just said, you know what? I got on the scale and I was like, okay, this is like, I feel bad.
Yeah.
And I've been waking up earlier. I've been sleeping better.
Boundaries are the key here, especially now I get out in the sunshine. I go hike every day. I'm a non-alcoholic beer girly, so you'll catch me drinking athletics. I think that's just the key. You got to have boundaries and sleep. Otherwise, I think that this place can devour you whole.
It's very toxic, and it can, especially the stress, and it's just easy to go have a beer or a drink. And then, you know, next thing you know, you've had 6 of them and you wake up, like I said, and you just feel you're dragging. And, you know, for me, I'm having to like write and watch things and pay attention. And it's like the mental exhaustion sometimes can translate into physical exhaustion.
You can totally burn out. Yeah.
Sometimes I just go home and I just need to like not be around anybody. And I'm an extrovert, but I just need to like not be around anybody and just lay down and like watch a movie, just do anything just to not think about all of the, cause it's so much going on in any given day.
Yeah. You could just never stop working. You have to unplug. It's so important to just put the phone down and do that self-care.
Well, Representative Armstrong, good talking to you.
Thank you, Jeff.
We'll be watching the bills, and we'll be seeing you in Juneau, and it's going to be a pretty interesting next couple of weeks.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Stay tuned.
Thanks again. Folks, if you have an idea for a podcast or want to do a podcast, get a hold of me, and stay tuned for the next one. Landline.